So for the next 15 minutes, you're going to have to listen to me. As I said before, my name is Sonate Fancel. I work at California State University in Fresno. And I will be talking more about a service type of project that we do. We have quite a few of those. It's not so much fundamental research. It is really helping out several companies working on product development. So I'm going to talk about a product codenamed OR151, which is a plant growth regulator and a biostimulant to improve color development on red seedless table grapes. Okay, so a little bit of background for those of you who do not know the California table grape industry very well. The very first table grape vineyard was planted by a man named William Wolfskill, and that was in 1839. Now, if you ever visit UC Davis and you go up to the Winters area, you will find a really big germplasm repository called Wolfskill as well, so it's named after him. And he planted that more or less in the Los Angeles area, or what is now known as Los Angeles. And in the mid-1800s, table grape cuttings were planted mostly for the mining era that happened in California during the gold rush. Now, in 1860, William Thompson planted an Eastern Mediterranean grape, which is Thompson seedless. That's a very, very versatile grape that's used in wine grape production, table grape production, raisins, as well as juice. Today, the San Joaquin Valley and the Coachella Valley are the major areas for table grape production itself. And California, although there's some table grapes in other states around the country, we have about 99% of the table grape production in California. So if you look at the data that came from the California Table Grape Commission for 2016, the total grape acreage, this is including all the commodity groups and grapes, is over 700,000 acres in California. And table grapes make about 12.5% of that. But you will see what we talk about in terms of crop value. In 2016, table grape crop was the fourth largest crop ever. 110 million box units were packed, and that is the equivalent of 19-pound boxes. Now, the domestic per capita consumption at that point was about 8.3 pounds. I'm not part of that 8.3 pounds. I can't eat any more grapes. And about 36% of this 110 million boxes got exported to some of the major export areas. And the crop value was a record high of $1.85 billion. So although it was the fourth largest crop, it was still the highest in terms of record prices. So 15 table grape cultivars represent about 85% of the total volume, and the top five of them is about 54% of the total volume. So there's only about five of them that's really the big number of grapes, and Scarlet Royal at the moment is at the top of the list, with Autumn King, which is a white seedless, Flame and Crimson seedless are the two red seedless varieties, and as well as Sugar One. Now, mostly why I have that on there is because the project that I'm talking about is all about Crimson Seedless. Oh, I'm going backwards here. There we go. Okay, so if we talk about Crimson Seedless, it is a red late season table grape variety. Very good eating quality. It was developed by the USDA by Dr. David Ramming, and it was released in 1989. Pretty vigorous grower with really good fertility. As I said, the berries are really good to eat. But the problem with Crimson Seedless is always color development. Now, depending on where you are in the world, Crimson is planted worldwide. You're going to have either too much color or too little. We are in the Central Valley. The color is usually not a lot. It is really struggling to get to a red color. Now, usually this color development problem actually gives you issues. It really creates a lot of economical losses. So this is just a picture to show you what happens if you have Crimson Seedless in some other countries. South Africa on the left, that is the perfect color that people want on these grapes. They're really beautiful. And then in Australia, they tend to be a little darker if you go to places like Chile. Sometimes these grapes can almost get to a black color, which is also not so good. They want it very bright red. If we look at what happens at Fresno State, 2016, 2017, that's the color. And those grapes are not underripe. They are about 18, 19 bricks in terms of sugar, but they just don't look like they're ripe. So you can assume that this would be a consumer problem. Someone seeing that on a supermarket shelf will not want to buy it because it doesn't look ripe. So plant growth regulators has been used a lot to try and improve the color for several red and black table grapes. It's not only crimson. And the most common ones used is ethepon. You might know it by several other trade names. Also, abscisic acid, which you might know as trade names like Proton, for instance. But some of these plant growth regulators can actually cause other problems, like berry softening, or maybe it will have issues in cold storage. So we're looking at very different plant growth regulators at the moment. OR151 is registered in a lot of countries as an organic plant biostimulant. So it makes it easier because some of your other plant growth regulators out there are not completely, they're not organic and they're a bit more on the toxic end. OR151, you can spray it and harvest it the next day. There's not really a re-entry period at this point. It improves grape berry color in studies around the world, but we haven't been testing it a whole lot in the California table grape industry. So usually your anthocyanins are what helps color development in red and black grapes. Now, that's usually the pigmentation or a combination of all five of those anthocyanins up there, and some of them get upregulated, downregulated. Depending on your cultivar, depending on your climate, you get different levels of these that will express the color in grapes. Now, what we did is we tested OR151 against a number of commercially available plant growth regulators, as well as a wetting agent that we put in there to make sure that we can get some variability, hopefully, in the grape color. So we started this project in 2016, and we used a randomized complete block design. All the statistical analysis was done on SAS. And the block that we used was planted in 2002, and the crimson was actually grafted onto Freedom rootstock on a closed gable trellis system, and we have a vine spacing of 12 by 6 feet. Now, this block is actually at Fresno State. Luckily, I don't have to drive too far. I just walk out my back door, and I can get into the vineyard. Now, we kept everything in the vineyard at a commercial level, everything including pesticides, herbicides, the normal working actions on the clusters, leaf pulling, those kind of things were done as you would do out in the field. So our farm manager was taking care of that. The only part that we managed was the actual plant growth regulator applications. So here are some of the group, or a group of my students actually working out there. On the left-hand side is just what we do in terms of spraying. If you use some of these products, full PPE is obviously necessary. On the right-hand side is one of my master's students. She works in the, on her master's in, out of the chemistry department. So in 2016, we harvested on September 7th, right around 19 bricks. This year, we are anticipating to harvest next week. We are quite a bit behind. The season is a little bit later. We do weekly berry samplings after we started the whole spraying program. And at harvest, we will collect a whole lot of berry samples specifically for HPLC analysis, berry chemistry, the normal basic TA, pH bricks, as well as we use a Minolta handheld spec to do the berry surface color, berry size, berry firmness, and we do a complete trial of cold storage on these grapes. So this is just where we were harvesting, packing. I pulled my whole class into this to help us with clipping out of all the rotten berries. It takes a lot of time, especially you have to do it in one day, and there's 84 boxes involved in this, all 19 pounds. We usually commercially pack and we commercially wrap these pallets, and then on the right-hand side we will take the grapes to Fowler packing. At Fresno State, we do not have a cold storage facility that is commercial, so we use an outside company that's always very accommodating to help us out. So result-wise, It was interesting, for the first year we didn't see any differences between these plant growth regulators in terms of berry chemistry so much, except the anthocyanins. I will show you that in a minute. No berry firmness problems, no berry size issues, cold storage potential was all very good, rot indications were also quite good. We didn't have anything that was more rotten than anything. But if we look at the total anthocyanins, this is preliminary data that my master's student did. Every time we would see a pretty significant difference where OR151 is involved. Now, OR151 with a surfactant or a wetting agent definitely had more total anthocyanins. And then where OR51 was involved in combinations with some of your other plant growth regulators, we also found higher levels of total anthocyanins. If you look, or if you break it down into your different compounds here, again, OR151 in this case, in combination with ethapon and a surfactant, gave us more malvidin 3-glucoside kumarate in this case. So the OR151 again came out top, and then if you go down on the statistical analysis, OR151 again started to come out. We didn't see a whole lot of the abscisic acid yet, but they started to come out in one of your cyanide and 3-glucoside kumarate analysis. Again, OR151 was significantly more in terms of anthocyanins, and also in your delphinidins, again, OR151 came out. So it's interesting. It's not, all the data has not been completely worked out yet because we are waiting for the second season to see how things are different. But the chemistry student working on this, she used SAS, one of the newer versions, to run all of this, and it was pretty interesting to see where OR151 stands. So it's preliminary indications. It's only 1 year's data. It's nothing more than that, that we do see some enhancement, but mostly on an HPLC level. You do not see this in the actual camera work that you do. If you take the Minolta handheld spec, you get surface color of the berry. So with the naked eye, you do not see that difference, but you see it in the anthocyanins when you run HPLC analysis at the moment. So for the future, as I said, 2016 was the first season. We are harvesting next week. We're going to dive a little bit more into the chemistry. The company I work with, they have a chemist on board that developed this product, and the master student in the chemistry department, as well as the chemist at this company, they will be working on the chemistry for this product to see where it actually works in the plant. So there's a little bit of biochemistry that's going to come into play. It is running as a master thesis project at the moment, and we are going to extend the study to include a couple more reds and black cultivars, which will run a little bit longer. This is one cultivar. We started off on crimson, but we will go towards maybe flame seedless as well as summer royal and autumn royal, which are black seeded grapes, or seedless grapes, sorry. Okay, so I just wanted to say thank you to Fresno State, the Department of Viticulture and Enology, my lab team, especially Jeff Division, who's the technician. He's been running all the studies on this and also training the students. My master's student, Diep, she's the one that's behind all the data analysis. The Agricultural Research Institute at California State University for funding, and Fowler Packing for all their help in terms of cold storage. Thank you.